Today on Maine Calling, preparedness for everyone. You've likely heard the Scout motto, be prepared. It's good advice, even though, let's face it, the natural human inclination is to put off thinking about emergencies. After all, day-to-day life is challenging enough. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we are going to talk with people who do think about emergencies and natural disasters all the time. We'll find out what happens on the local and state level in the case of severe storms, flooding, wildfires, power outages, or other crises. And we'll find out ways we can all be a little more prepared because, unfortunately, it's not a matter of if, but when. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Emergencies and disasters are, unfortunately, inevitable. The key is to prepare for a variety of situations, and today we're going to talk about what that looks like on the local and state level, and also what we can all do to be better prepared, and everybody can do more. Joining me, Pete Rogers, who is director of the Maine Emergency Management Agency, Darren Woods, director of Aroostook County Emergency Management Agency, and Jeff Lowe, who is fire chief for the city of Bangor. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have plans in place in case of a natural disaster? How about a power outage or a hazardous spill? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Pete Rogers, I have a feeling that the reason it's Emergency Preparedness Month is because it's hurricane season. And, you know, we have had some serious storms here in Maine. But tell us, give us a list. What are the things that you all are thinking about? What are you preparing for? What keeps you up at night?
You know, Jennifer, and you know me well, the list is long. Since I've taken over, we've seen just about everything come through. It's been really interesting. We've seen everything from Hurricane Lee, which we were very lucky that had gone out to sea a little bit, but that was certainly on the radar that we were keeping an eye on. We have winter storms and blizzards, which we're all familiar with. We have flooding, which unfortunately many of us saw over the Christmas holidays a few years ago. Tropical storms, nor'easters, extreme cold, and ice storms. I think everybody can remember the ice storm of 98, where, you know, we were crippled for many weeks. Wildfires is something that we've been dealing with this year. We've been working very closely with the fire service to contact with them, working with the guard, you know, lift capabilities, things like that. Unfortunately, we're also in a drought right now, as everybody knows. If you walk outside and walk onto your grass, everything is pretty crispy out there. And we've even had some earthquakes over the past few months. So, you know, it's been a mixed bag of a lot of different disasters that we're keeping an eye on. And those are the natural ones. We're also concerned about cyber. You know, how many people do we know that have had cyber attacks and that are having the supplemental, you know, programs where people are watching the credit and things like that. So there's an awful lot out there right now.
Lots to think about. Jeff Lowe, I'll turn to you next. I think a lot of people, they don't really think about these things ahead of time. They say they're going to listen today. I know that when we've done emergency management shows in the past, I've gone and bought a bunch of water. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I throw it out when it's expired. Jeff, what would you really just like, instead of, we'll get to practical tips later, but how would you like people to think about potential emergencies? What kind of mindset would you like us all to have?
I think one of the problems that we run into when we do planning or we do preparation is there's a lot of reliance on recency, meaning the most recent thing that's happened is what I'm going to be concerned about or I need to prepare for. And unfortunately, although we have, like Pete just mentioned, we have a lot of things that occur in the state of Maine, they aren't always as dramatic as you might find them in places like California or similar environments. So that creates a sense of ease, if you will, or it lessens the potential, it lessens the awareness of the potential impact, I think is what I'm trying to say, for these events when they occur. So I
Kind of
think,
complacency, like, oh, that happens over there.
And unfortunately, what people don't realize is everything that happens over there could certainly happen in Maine. And I think the mindset really has to be one of preparation, which is really what we're here to talk about. And we don't like to think about worst case scenario, but a lot of times I think we need to think that way. And that's missed when a lot of these things happen at the local level. There's a lot of reflection. Oh, we should have done this. We should have done that. We should have things ready. And unfortunately, those lessons are learned a little too late.
Okay, I will want to find out what each of your agencies does and how you work together. But Darren, let's go to you for some of those practical tips. Other than maybe having some fresh water on hand, what do you recommend that people do?
So really, it really starts with understanding your area and what the hazards are that you may face where you live. So every part of the world, country, state, and even our counties has different hazards that have to be prepared for. And the best way to start any preparedness planning is understanding what hazards may affect you where you are.
Okay, so you're in Aroostook County. What are some that are special to your area? And I'm guessing it was funny because I was going to ask you, and I will ask others about, knowing that maybe an emergency won't be able to depend on your cell phone, but that's sort of an everyday part of life in Aroostook County, right?
It is. I mean, while technology is improving, it's certainly not what we would consider stable or reliable during an incident. So, having backup communication plans, some of the hazards you referred to in Aroostook County are things like flooding, severe summer and severe winter storms, and certainly power outages are really a major concern for us, especially different times of year. And if it lasts for more than a few hours.
That's right, because often you're in the coldest part of the state.
Unfortunately, that's true.
Well, Pete, let's talk about how everybody works together. I mean, we have three representatives of three kinds of agencies here: a local fire department, a county emergency management, and then you at the state level. But then I also know that you're working with the National Weather Service and local places that may, schools that may provide shelter and things like that. If something's happening, what happens? Walk me through. Let's see. A storm, because we're in hurricane season, we'll use that as an example. NOAA's saying that a storm is headed to New England. What happens?
Sure. So we have a number of different modeling software programs that we use. So we can see what's coming from quite a ways out. We're in touch with the National Hurricane Center. We're in touch with the National Weather Service, both Caribou and Gray. We keep an eye on it. We've got matrix what that we look at to see, okay, 2 days out, here's what we should be doing. One day out, here's we should be working on. The big thing is the partnership. We need to make sure that we all have a common operating picture so everybody sees the same thing at once, at the same time, in the same information. So we'll set up a conference call with the partners to get everybody on the same sheet of music. Here's what we have, here's what's coming, here are some of the concerns that we have. And, again, Maine is a small state, which is really to our benefit because we know almost everybody in the state. We've worked with people before in disasters. And you can see that when you go to a scene and everybody's kind of joking after the fact, and you see the first responders and the state team and the counties. And if they have a good relationship, that means that there's a solid partnership. So we get together. If we decide that we need to circle up and we need to activate the State Emergency Operations Center. We're in contact with the counties, we're in contact with the locals. So we all have that same common operating picture for everybody. And at that point, we start to manage the incident. Again, we're a day out. Here's what's coming. Where do we need to pre-position assets? What does Aroostook County need in particular? And because Maine is such a big state, we have a lot of different scenarios. What's happening in Aroostook County may not be happening what's down in York County or Washington County. So we have to make sure that we're hitting all the different needs of the counties as partners.
And I'm guessing part of the challenge is messaging, right? You know, we hear about places where people don't evacuate because, oh, they're always telling me to evacuate and I'm fine. Trying to figure out what to tell the public and when.
It is. And we get together as a group and talk about messaging. When do we start pushing out messaging? Do we start with social media? Do we do a press release? Do we do a press conference? When do we get the governor's office involved? And we talk about all those different things to try to get as much information out to the public so they can make informed decisions as to what they need to do as well. Do we need anything further to stock up on? Do we need to be worried about power outages? Because if so, maybe we need to get a few more batteries. Maybe we need to get another couple gallons of fuel for the generator, that type of thing. So
All
it's
right.
important to get that out there.
Yeah, Fire Chief Lowe, you mentioned earlier that after every incident, there are lessons learned. And I'm wondering if you can, not to put you too much on the spot, but if you can think of an example of something that happened and afterwards you're able to say, okay, this went well, but you know what? Next time we're going to do this.
Yes, so a lot of that experience we get through exercises where we will run through scenarios that are disaster oriented, whether it's an aircraft crash or something involving a maritime environment or whatever the case may be. I think one of the ongoing lessons that we continue to realize, or one of the areas that we continue to realize we can do better in, is with communications. Not only interagency communications, like at the local level in between departments, but certainly going back to our partners at the county and the state level, in messaging out to the public as well, what to release, when to release it, what is pertinent, what's not. That's one of the biggest areas that I think we struggle with from our perspective anyway, is getting that messaging out, getting it to be timely and getting it to be accurate, and making sure the communication is flowing both ways. I really, that's for every exercise I think we run into.
All right. And you know, a lot is changing, isn't it, with technology, Chief? Like, you know, obviously Maine Public is the state's emergency alert system, but now they're, Pete mentioned social media, and you know, we have alerts that sometimes pop up on our phone. They don't always work very smoothly. There was an incident just a few weeks ago where people from a very large area got an alert about something happening, you know, sort of 30 miles away. But tell me about that. Tell me about the ability to reach a lot of people right away now.
So for what we have a mass notification system where we are able to we're able to send information out through people who subscribe to the system through the city. So if there is a city notification that has to go out, we're able to do that. We also have access. If we need to send information out, we would feed that back through the county for a larger scale notification. But we'll also use social media, either whether it's X or Facebook or any of the other platforms that we have, just to send out general initial notification. Usually that notification acknowledges that there's some type of an event or incident that's occurred and will give some preliminary steps that can be taken, such as avoid the area or contact such and such for additional information. I would defer back to Pete as far as the statewide notification as to how that's accessed and how that information's distributed.
Yeah, and we're going to have a listener question about that in just a second, but I want to bring you into this conversation, Darren. I'm thinking that all of these alerts, all of this works if people are listening to the radio or watching the television or have their phone in their hand. But there are a lot of people who live their lives without turning on the radio or television, and they don't walk around with their phones in their hand. Do you recommend that if there is an emergency, those of us who hear about it think, who in my life might not hear about this? Should I go knock on the neighbor's door? Should I, just get in my car and let some people know?
Absolutely. So, referencing your point earlier about the recent notification that went far and wide, even though the incident in that we were speaking of occurred very far from my area, I was in the grocery store when that came through, and of course everybody looks at me and said, "What's going on?" And I said, "Well, it's not in our area. However, do you know anybody, or do you have anyone that you care about or that you can reach out to in that area just to make sure that they got that information?" There's a lot of different ways that we can put out information, such as that wireless emergency alerting, social media, but even in these certain areas, like in Aroostook County, we have areas where we have Amish settlers. They don't have any of that. So I physically have to contact somebody locally to go over and start spreading the word face to face so we can get information out there.
All right, we're going to go to Joanne calling from Naples. Joanne, you had a question about the alerts, correct?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry that the call kept dropping. I am in Cumberland County, and my background is emergency nursing in San Diego for almost 30 years. We at an EMS paramedic trauma team, and we did the same thing with after any event. We would always get together and find out what went right, what did not. My concern is the alerts that are not coming through here in Naples. When Robert Carr, the shooter, was at large, I got a text from a friend in Costa Rica who told me about it, and it was many hours later before we actually got an alert. I'm only 20 miles away from Poland. And I called the South Windham EMA at that time and spoke with one of the coordinators, and he said, "Well, we had some missteps, but we're working on this." But yet in July, there was a shooting in the center of North Windham, the shopping area, and we did not get an alert. It went statewide, so it was delayed. So I just wondered what's being done with actual alerts. I mean, I do get the Amber Alerts. I sign up for anything Cumberland County offers, but there has to be a better way because we're just not getting them.
Pete.
Sure. Thanks for the question, Joanne. First off, when we get notified that there's a potential for an alert, what we do at the Emergency Management in Augusta, we start talking directly with the incident commander who's on the ground. We talk to the county emergency management agency to make sure that they're aware, and we get the information from the incident commander. That's the person on the ground that's seeing what's going on in real time that can provide the best information. So it's a conversation with the county level, the incident commander, and us. We then get that information, and sometimes they give us the information and say, "But don't put it out right yet. Things are going on that we want to hold for." And then other times they'll say, "Yes, we would like to have it sent out to these parameters." So what we do is we bracket it. And I won't get into the technical side because, frankly, I am not a technology guy. But basically, we put a bracket on that area and then we send it out. And what the way it works is it goes and it hits everything within that area. Now, sometimes it bleeds over a little bit, sometimes it bleeds under a little bit because it's an imperfect system. But for the most part, we've had real good success with that. The one in particular that went statewide had to do something with the number of nodes, and the nodes make you can adjust different locations. And apparently, if there are too many of them, trying to refine it more, it ended up reverting back to statewide. And that's what happened in that case. So we've been working with the contractor to get the bugs out of that. We've got a good fix in place. The other thing, we are trying to get all of the counties to have statewide alert capabilities. And we've had good success with a number of those folks doing that. So they can actually send their own emergency alerts, thus eliminating some of the redundancy between notifying different people. The other part is many of them have user subscribed systems where you can call in and sign up for those alerts in that area. I live down in Cumberland County myself, and I've signed up to a local one as well as a statewide, so I can hear what's going on statewide. But anybody who signed up for that will also get those alerts. Again, it's an imperfect system in that some people will always not get those because of terrain, that type of thing. But for the most part, the system works pretty well.
Yeah, and let me ask you, Pete. Thank you, Joanne, for the question. You said I sign up for. So I just want to be clear. There are certain alerts that will go to every cell phone number in Maine, correct? That you don't have to sign up, right? And then there are others that you can sign up for. How does someone find out what's available in their local area and sign up for them?
Best way is to contact their county emergency management agency, and they can give them the information because different counties use different alerting systems. So you would sign up for whatever that county is using and whatever their software is, and they could walk them through how to do that. Sometimes it's on their website, other times it's better just to make a call.
And Darren, what's kind of an example of something you all might be sending out?
So for us, it would be the wireless emergency alerts, but it would be for things like shelter in place or monitoring hazardous conditions. I guess I would just add to what Pete was saying as well to recommend that the caller reaches out to their cellular company because they want to make sure that those wireless alerts are active and turned on. Different cell companies have different strategies as far as putting that information out. So it'd be good to just check with their cell phone company.
All right. Well, we were talking about emergency preparedness on Maine Calling. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, or send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking to experts who deal with emergencies and disasters. Among their jobs is to prepare for worst case scenarios. My guest today, Darren Woods, who's Aroostook County Emergency Management Agency Director, Jeff Lowe, who is the Fire Chief in the City of Bangor, and Pete Rogers, Maine Emergency Management Director. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you worry about? What are you prepared for? What would you like to know better, how to be better prepared? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling us now is Command Sergeant Major Alexander Clifford with the Maine Army National Guard. Thanks so much for calling in, Sergeant Major Clifford.
Well, thanks for having me in, Jennifer.
Well, explain to us when the National Guard is called to help. What threshold has to be met? Who orders you to help?
Sure. So much like you said at the top of your broadcast with the Boy Scout motto, the National Guard motto is always ready, always there. And the National Guard is called out when emergencies exceed our local capacities and when specialized skills, manpower, or equipment are required to stabilize a situation and protect lives and property.
All right. Now, I know that there are several different units in Maine with several different specialties. Are all National Guard members also ready to help out in a local disaster or emergency?
Yes, they're all subject to be ordered to duty by the governor, and that's a request that comes up through the local and then to the county and then through the Maine Emergency Management Agency. We work with the Maine Emergency Management Agency on what type of requests are coming up there, and then those are presented to the governor to see if she wishes to activate the National Guard. All of our members have civilian skill sets as well as their military occupational specialties. So we may have somebody who's a school teacher in the community, but they're a plumber or electrician with us. They may be local law enforcement, and may be part of our military police company, or maybe they're part of our computer cyber team. So we have a lot of different trades and a lot of different skill sets and specialties to draw upon.
Okay, it seems like it's been a while. Can you give me an example of when the National Guard has helped out in a disaster or emergency in Maine, has been called up by the governor?
Sure. The largest one we think back to was the ice storm of 98. We had a lot of debris removal and a significant amount of trimming back of trees and helping stabilize areas and open roads back up.
We're losing you on your phone, but it sounds like during the big ice storm in 98.
I'm sorry, my cell phone connection.
Most important thing that CMP crews could not get to the places that they were going, or the other power crew, all the power crews needed to be able to get there. I really appreciate you calling in, State Command Sergeant Major Alexander Clifford with the Maine Army National Guard. Pete Rogers, you were in the National Guard. How did it prepare you for what you're doing today?
It's interesting. It's very similar. During the ice storm, we were activated and we had a operation center set up similar to what we have in Augusta. And, you know, you've got the same positions, you've got the same folks working logistics, operations, command, you know, right down the line. So it's very similar. I will say that whenever we activate, the National Guard is a trusted partner with us, and we almost always have National Guard in the facility. We use them very heavily during COVID. They were partners with us and they're helping with some transportation. They're involved in any exercise that we do. We try to build those folks in there. So we've got a really good relationship with those folks.
Okay. We have Alexander Clifford back with us. Is there anything you want to add, Alexander? I'm so sorry that something happened with your connection.
It sure did. I apologize for that, Jennifer. We have individual specialties like our weapons of mass destruction civil support team. They get called out to help local and county and state officials when there's some sort of suspected substance out there. They have mobile labs and can go in and assist with a local scene. So from the individual all the way up to us bringing in entire companies or hundreds of individuals on duty, like Director Rogers was saying, to help out with a situation like COVID.
All right. Well, I really appreciate calling and calling back, State Command Sergeant Major Alexander Clifford with the Maine Army National Guard. And calling in now, Robbie Gross, who is the Chief Forest Ranger with the Maine Forest Service. Thanks for calling in, Robbie.
Thank you for having me today. I very much appreciate it.
Well, we talked about the drought on Monday's program and how the current conditions mean a higher risk of wildfires. Right now, what do people need to be careful about?
Yeah, great question. Right now, you know, fire indices across the state are moderate to high. We are seeing very dry conditions, and they really just need to make sure that they have a situational awareness about them. And what we're really telling people is they should be reaching out to their local officials if they want to consider open burning. And in many places, open burn restrictions have been put in place to restrict burning. So that's really the big thing that folks should be focused on.
All right. If somebody comes across a wildfire, should they try to put it out themselves? Something small?
If it's something really small, you know, that's always their comfort level. But really the first thing they should be doing is calling 911, making sure they get emergency responders on the way so that we can put fire out very quickly and safely.
Tell us about this year. I understand there have been a number of wildfires this year.
Yeah, so far this year, we have seen 677 wildfires burning 454 acres of land. This past August was not necessarily unprecedented, but over the last 20 years, we saw wildfire occurrence more than doubled, which is significant. It's indicative of the fire conditions, of the field conditions, the weather conditions that are out there. As we go into this fall, as fuel conditions change, we really just need to keep our awareness of what our conditions are and make sure that we're really looking out for each other. The great thing that we have going for us is our partnerships across the state of Maine. We've been talking about that, but the local fire service interacting with state partners right up through to MEMA really presents a pattern of success for us to deal with wildland fire effectively.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that there have been more than 600, but none of them have been, you know, big news. Wanted to ask you, how of those hundreds of wildfires we had this year, do we know how most of them started?
Yeah, there's three very distinct causes of debris burning. Most of these are people caused, certainly are at the top of our list. Campfires seem to be a consistent theme this year, just not putting our fires out completely when they have them. And then equipment caused fires seems to be a theme this year. You know, anytime we operate equipment in and around dry fuels, we tend to have these types of circumstances happen.
So people doing landscaping work.
Yeah, it's maybe not necessarily to that extent, but if you were to drive a piece of equipment through a hay field, for example, you have a lot of hot exhaust, you know, interacting with the dry fuel, which can cause fires. Circumstances
right.
like that.
Yeah. Well, Robbie Gross, thanks so much for calling in. The Maine Forest Service Chief Forest Ranger. And Darren, I'm guessing things like driving equipment through a dry hay field is something that's right on your mind right now.
Yeah, I mean, equipment, people out enjoying the trails, trying to just make sure people stay vigilant and not cause further issues. And even cars and trucks that are trying to drive through fields, we've had our share of people joyriding in a field and getting stuck in their hot exhaust, lighting a field on fire.
An email here from Barbara. I'm interested in what the route emergency signs are for and how we know how to use them. I'm sure at one time it must have been covered, but it'd be nice to tell us once in a while. I really like this question. You see this especially in sort of beach communities, Pete, where you maybe see an evacuation route sign, and then you think, well, I didn't see another one. What can you tell us about that sort of map of evacuation route signs? And I'm guessing you might advise us if we live in a place, especially a place that's connected by one bridge or one road, that it might be a good idea to do a test drive once in a while and figure out what you might do.
It is, you know, it's always good to make a plan and test. You know, the first thing that when we're talking about preparedness is to make a plan, right? You want to make sure that you know how to get out. You want to make sure that you know how other family members can get in. And when you look at the route signs, so it's interesting, you've got two separate sets of those, which can be very confusing. You've got the ones that are for the evacuation routes, which will get you out of a flooded area or a disaster area. And they'll get you to safe ground, if you will. So you follow those out to higher ground away from where the potential flooding is on the coast, for instance. The confusing part can be that you also see signs that are very similar that are on highways that are actually, I think, DOT signs. And I remember reading an article probably 2 years ago where they explained that, which was great because I didn't understand myself. I certainly knew what the evacuation signs were because we do deal with those. And, you know, there are a lot of drills where you look at those. The DOT signs are more about get off on this exit or that type of thing. So I believe they have something on their website that might be able to better explain those. The evacuation routes, though, that is something that you definitely want to take a look at. If you live in those areas, those low-lying areas, and there are evacuation signs in the area, it's always a good idea to drive the road, know where it goes, and have some alternate routes. So if all of a sudden you're trying to get out of this area and that road is flooded, what's your plan B? What's your plan C?
From Bruce here. Most homeowners policies exempt flood coverage. Some companies will not cover water damage inside your house if a fallen tree opens a hole in the roof while 6 inches of rain is coming down. All homeowners should get flood insurance, which is a separate policy and often very inexpensive. In most cases, away from a flooding body of water, these policies are in the range of $200 a year and could pay out to $240,000. Along these lines, people should monitor their trees. A dead section of a large tree will fall at some point. Better to keep up with monitoring and maintenance than to repair cars and buildings after a storm. Darren, do you have an opinion about flood coverage or about tree removal?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that statement. So it's important for people to understand the area that they're in, the hazards that they may face. But even those folks that are away from bodies of water need to consider, you know, do I have a big hill behind me, which would cause flooding in my home? And also equally important is how that insurance works. So if you were to get a policy today, it doesn't kick into effect for 30 days. So in the springtime, ahead of that flood season, we encourage people to engage their insurance companies and turn those policies on long before that 30-day.
Okay. Well, we do need to go to a break, and I know we're talking about big emergencies and big natural disasters, but Chief Lowe, when we come back, I want to ask you about some simple fire prevention in your own home, because my understanding is that that is the most common emergency that a family will face. So we are going to take a break. The phone number, if you have questions about emergency preparedness, about your region, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or post to Facebook and Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're talking about emergency preparedness. Our guests today, Bangor Fire Chief Jeffrey Lowe, Pete Rogers with MEMA, and Darren Woods with Aroostook County Emergency Management. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email, if you're quick, to talk@mainpublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. So Chief Lowe, as promised, I want to ask you about fire danger in your own home. I know that home fires are very, very common. All you have to do is watch the news for a week. What should we all know? We see in movies getting on all fours, you know, because we know that heat rises and smoke rises. If you have a fire, what are other just simple things we all should know if there's a fire in your home?
So I think one of the first things you need to understand is two ways out of the building. Figure out what that would be for you, especially if you have children. How are they going to get out of the building? How can you help them? And then practice those drills. They're called Edith drills, which is exit drills in the home. And you can make it a game. You can make it enjoyable for the kids while you're practicing. But that'll pay big dividends in the event that there's a fire in the house and they need to escape. Something else that's very important is that people have working smoke alarms in their homes. Not only smoke alarms, but carbon monoxide detectors are also becoming very important in the home. So smoke alarms, we recommend you change the batteries when you change the clocks. If you don't do that, that's okay, but you should be at least changing your batteries once a year and making sure those work. Those are essential pieces of equipment to protect life, especially when people are sleeping at night. The early notification given by the smoke alarm will allow people to escape, and usually they can come out unscathed if those are in place and working properly. A couple of other things that people should be aware of is any vital documents that they have really should be kept in some type of fireproof box, whether it's some type of safe in your home or just a home safety box that you can put birth certificates, passports, other forms of identification. And those are some of the biggest things that I could recommend for people to be ready for fire safety. Certainly if they have a fire extinguisher in their house, that would be a big benefit as well.
Okay. And my father-in-law is a safety inspector. He doesn't go into any building. He doesn't spend the night in a hotel. He doesn't go to a restaurant. He doesn't go to a convention without looking around and thinking about exits and emergencies. Jeff, is that overkill, or do you kind of recommend everyone do that?
No, really, I don't think it's overkill at all, especially if you're in a place that you're not familiar with. You know, I at home, I could probably close my eyes and crawl on the floor and find my way out of the house very quickly. If I'm in a hotel room, or I'm in another place that I'm going to be spending a lot of time in, if something were to happen and visibility were to go away because of a power outage or because of a smoke condition, it's going to be difficult to find your way out where you aren't familiar with that layout. It's a unique environment. So yeah, absolutely. Having that situational awareness, like we talked about previously in the program, is super important.
All right. We're going to go to an email from Terry. Have you seen this near real-time feed of national power outages that has street-level resolution? Historically, communications between the utilities and first responders has been a huge problem in coordinated response. Doing this Ting geospatial web service, we now have national outage data in GIS format. How will this transform response? I guess that's a question for you, Pete.
I'm not familiar with that specific one. I will tell you that many of the county emergency management agencies have liaisons with the utilities in their emergency operations center. So you have somebody right there who, if you get a road that's closed due to power lines, for instance, and trees and debris, you can literally just look across the EOC and say, "Hey, this is going on. This is an emergency. The fire trucks, the ambulances can't get through that. Can you make that a priority?" Similarly, we often have the utilities in our state emergency operations center as well. We've had people from the electric utilities. We've had the PUC in there for the same reasons. It makes it so much easier to be able to look at somebody in the eye and say, "Hey, we've got this thing going on. This hospital is without power. What can you do to get that back online quickly?" So it's similar by the sounds of it, but it's a bit of a different different way to get around it, I guess.
All right. Jeff on Facebook says, regarding communication during an emergency, I'm in Stew Bend. I've had Verizon for 8 years. It was reliable till mid-July. I heard that Trump cut a subsidy for rural cell towers. I no longer have a functioning cell at my house. It's at best intermittent. Can the state's emergency fund help? So I just want to actually address one thing Jeff says, is that he heard that there was a subsidy for rural cell towers cut. Darren, is that true?
That's not something that I'm aware of at all.
Okay. And is there any kind of emergency fund to help people, Pete, with who are having trouble with cell service?
Not specifically. What I would recommend is that they contact the carrier itself and let them know what's going on. It could be something very different. I've not heard that situation before, but maybe they can help out.
All right. We're going to go to Rip, who's calling from Southwest Harbor. Hi, Rip. Go ahead.
Hi. As I was driving through Mount Desert Island today, I mean, it's all forested here. And I know about a century ago, we had a huge fire that burned most of the island. And well, all this forest looks like just a tinderbox waiting to go up. And I know it hasn't had a fire in a while, so the forest floor is full of leaves and other tinder. I wondered if there's some plan to address any of that in this highly forested state.
Thanks for your question. Unfortunately, we don't have Robbie Gross with us anymore, the Chief Forest Ranger of the Forest Service. But Pete, I have a feeling you have conversations with Robbie. So, what can you tell us about just looking at the conditions, trying to figure out how to best prevent, not just fight, fires that break out?
We do, and I can certainly circle back with Robbie after this and talk about the specifics to that area. We are very concerned. We know that the forest is very dry. We know that the tinder is at an all-time high. We're lucky that we did have a couple of instances with some minor rain. Did not do a lot to help the drought, but it did help a little bit with the fire. I know that it's come down in some areas, which is a good sign. I know that those folks are out and looking around, and the big concern is the fall, right? Things get very dry, and if we continue down with the drought like we are, and it's expected that we will, based over the long range forecast, it's going to continue to be dry with very little relief in sight. I know that they're looking at that very closely, looking very closely at the fire situation, the burn permits and things like that. So I can definitely circle up with Robbie after this.
And also, I want to turn to you, Jeff, because I know Rip is calling about Southwest Harbor, but Bangor has a beautiful forest and lots of trees as well. Are you all actively doing anything to try to make the situation better on the ground?
Yeah, so there's not a lot of resources to do super aggressive forest management, which is kind of what it sounds like might be needed in this situation, or is what's needed in this situation. Other than awareness and making sure that we're ready to respond to events and try to capture them quickly before they get out of hand, there's not a lot we can do in that type of forested environment.
And Darren, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was just going to mention the Maine Forest Service has been working with counties and some local officials on wildfire risk reduction programs. I'm currently involved in one right now where they come in and they do assessments and come up with ways to mitigate some of that hazard. The big part of it is going to be the whole community approach, right? So whether it's the fire department or the Maine Forest Rangers, they can't do it all, can't be everywhere. Really rely on the public to be vigilant and try to help with prevention.
And when you say the public help, you know, are we talking about the olden days and fire brigades?
No, I mean, more just an awareness of how to avoid starting something.
Yeah,
Jennifer, if I can piggyback on that, Darren has a really good point. Part of the challenge with that, though, when we look at the management of forest fire, for example, here in Bangor, a lot of that effort Darren's talking about is around built-in areas where we have a wildland-urban interface, where people are living among the trees and those types of things. And it doesn't, while that is certainly one of the highest risk areas, it doesn't address some of those more remote areas where you find walking trails or camping sites or those types of things where a fire can get an aggressive head start on you.
All right. Well, Rip, thanks so much for your question. Pete Rogers, we have just a couple minutes left. Give us a checklist. We haven't mentioned go bags yet. What do you want people to sort of go in their cellar or go into their mud room and look for and make sure they have?
Sure. You know, there are a number of things to think about. You know, the first, as I'd mentioned previously, make a plan. Make sure that you've got a family communications plan. Make sure that you know about meeting places, about special needs, you know, plans for children, your pets. All of that is critical to that plan. When you think of an emergency kit, you know, water is key, right? You're looking for 1 gallon per person per day for at least 3 days. And if you can store more is better. You want non-perishable items for at least 3 days. Medications, prescriptions, over-the-counter essentials, those types of things. You want a first aid kit for the unexpected things that come up. Flashlight and batteries. Chances are we'll be losing power. So a flashlight and batteries are really something that you need to have on hand. Or the crank lights, you can buy some of those as well. And then radios, battery powered or hand cranked. A lot of the stations may be offline. If you have something that's hand cranked, you can at least tune in to some of those other stations. Personal items, hygiene items, copies of important documents, as the chief had mentioned, cash, local maps, you know, all of those things are really important to have on hand. You know, preparedness is not about fear. It's about empowerment. It's knowing that when the unexpected happens, that we're not powerless. You know, we're capable, we're ready. But we're asking the public, particularly during the month of September and Preparedness Month, to realize that they are a key teammate on this whole preparedness front, and we need them. It's not just about first responders.
Yeah, yeah. I love that you say cash. So many people do not carry cash today. And so that's a really important note. And you said maps. I think there's some young people don't even know what that is. But, you know, I actually used a map recently. I had one of the old DeLorme gazetteers, and I was out in the country and a place I was not familiar with, and lost my GPS and used my map. So I think it's, I hear you, Pete. I guess that's a long way of saying that. I really appreciate all of you being here today. Pete Rogers is the director of the Maine Emergency Management Agency. Darren Woods, director of Aroostook County Emergency Management Agency, and Jeffrey Lowe, fire chief for the city of Bangor. Today's sound engineer was Chris Bridges. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about the value of oral histories and some of the projects happening in Maine. They're really interesting. And also, we want to remind you that our newsletter comes out every Friday. It's free. It tells you what's coming up on Maine Calling and also has lots of great resources. You can just go to mainecalling.org, mainecalling.org, to sign up for that. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.